had once said that nothing in Rome or Cassino could equal it, and even that seemed not too high a compliment. There was one page, the opening of the third chapter, upon which it seemed a living spray of wild roses had been carelessly laid. So perfect each petal, each stamen, each thorn, the strong yet slender stem seeming to lift to make a link between the earth from which they sprang and the heavens of which they hinted. The flowers, so fragile, so vital, touched here and there with colours not of this world, colours whose names were known only in paradise. Fresh from brooding over this loveliness wrought by pen and brush wielded by human hand, I would see Brother Lawrence pass along the cloister or take his place in the refectory, a solemn, quiet, rather fattish man, in no way noticeable or distinguished. Yet I looked upon him with awe and admiration, and knew that if ever he should speak to me, I should sweat and stammer. On the afternoon of Lady Day, I was at work in the South Cloister, painstakingly adding word to word of my own humble manuscript, when a shadow fell over the page, and glancing sharply round, I saw not our novice master Father Simplon, but Brother Lawrence, looking with interest over my shoulder. I shook out my sleeve to screen my unworthy work from his eyes. He reached over and took up my quill and studied it. "A trifle too sharply cut," he said, and laid it back. "You are the one they call Edward, are you not?" I nodded. "Then I have a message for you. I am to ride out tomorrow to bring in the manorial dues from Amisham Vibray. You come with me to keep the reckoning. We shall be gone 3 days. We leave immediately after prime and carry food for the journey. I shall take the grey palfrey." I nodded again and gulped and stammered, overcome with elation. Brother Lawrence glanced once more at my manuscript and said gravely, "You have the makings of a penman." Then he walked away, leaving me dazzled by his cool, judicious compliment and by the prospect of spending 3 days in his company. Perhaps, I thought, I should eventually pluck up courage and lure him into talking about that wonderful copy of the Gospel of St. John. There wasn't a happier boy in Burgundy, in France, in Christendom than I, when, on the morning after Lady Day, we set off through the cold brightness of the spring morning. Even Brother Lawrence's choice of mount seemed fortunate to me. I loved Gris, the grey palfrey, and he knew and was fond of me. I was even pleased, God help me, at the thought of the food we carried in the saddlebags. We were to enjoy traveller's indulgence, and the meat and roast fowl thus conceded were, for me at least, a rare and special treat. For Father Simplon was a strict adherent to the rule of our founder, and never allowed to us novices the evasions and dispensations often openly enjoyed by our superiors. Brother Lawrence, Gris, good food, all doomed to be the instruments of pain rather than pleasure. During the past year, the seasons had gone awry. There had been a drought in the spring at the time of seed sowing, and in many fields the unsprouted corn had blown away with the dust on the easterly wind. August and September had been wet, so that the surviving crops and the fruit in the orchards had rotted as they ripened. Now, at the end of the long winter, there was famine on the land, and beggars on the road. I was almost 18 years old, but I had never before seen men and women and children gaunt and wild-eyed from hunger. Until I was 16, I had lived in my father's castle, dividing my time between a small room where my tutor ruled me and the great hall where food was always plentiful. At 16, I had entered my novitiate, and though under Father Simplon's rule food was coarse, simple, and sometimes unappetizing, no novice ever went hungry. Brother Lawrence carried, as was apparently customary on these occasions, a small alms bag of copper coins. To the first little group who accosted us, a man, two women, and a child, he offered his ritual charity. And even as the